We're joined on the G&M Family Market phone line by Chad Finn of the Boston Globe and Boston.com. Chad, a good Friday afternoon to you.
Same to you, Rich. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing great. Sunshine, the weekend is here. It's hard to find anything to complain about. For me, that's really good.
Yeah, me too. I suppose if I thought about it a while, I could come up with something, but I got nothing right now.
No. And I want to talk first about a wonderful piece you had about the best big game broadcasters in the business. Really fascinating, and certainly, as always, generated a lot of discussion.
Yeah, it's kind of the whole point of it, if I'm being honest, just to see what people's reaction is, and to those things tend to get a lot of reaction and get read and do really well online. So that is definitely part of the motivation in writing those kind of opinionated list things. But sort of germinated from Jim Nantz being everywhere over the last couple of weeks. It's the springtime of Nantz that we always get when he has the Masters and the Final Four basically in a matter of days. And I was kind of struck by sort of how uninspired he seemed. His call of North Carolina's victory was the confetti falls on North Carolina. He gets into the Masters, but that's kind of a very strongly mandated by the people who run the tournament as any event in sports. So he's not going to really get too animated there. He's going to talk in his hushed tones about the Azaleas the whole time. So I start thinking about how familiar he is and how many high, incredibly prominent sporting events he does, and sort of where he ranks with the other guys who do that, Joe Buck, Al Michaels, right on down the line. And so just put together a little bit of a ranking, a top 10, and so the reaction kind of surprised me. Most people seem to agree with me with a few general differences here and there. But I had Al Michaels first, Joe Buck second, Doc Emmerich, who's primarily hockey but as good at it as anybody's ever been, third, and it was kind of fun to have the back and forth on it all day.
Well, Nantz is interesting, too. There was a piece in the Washington Post about him a week and a half or so ago, and a lot of people lambasted it as kind of a puff piece, but it sure made it sound like, look, he is what he is. Is he a bit of a Pollyanna? Sure. We were talking to Jerry Montour, who was Bill Patrick in his ESPN days, talking about him last week, and he said, yeah, I don't agree with Nantz politically on anything, but he said that's who he is. He's just one of the nicest guys in the business.
He is a nice guy. He's basically, as he comes across on the air, hello, friends, that sort of thing, where you kind of wonder if it's sincere, but then you deal with him enough times and you realize that is how he is. I tried to find the right word to sort of describe it and didn't today. It's not milquetoast or anything like that, because that's too negative. I think his personality in that sense is a positive in that the people he works with really like working with him. He's not one of those guys who starts screaming at the production guys off the air. And there are guys on my list who do that. I'm not naming names, but there are a few of them. he is what he is, and for better or worse, I think it's for better in that case. But he is he's kind of a strange bird. I mean, he talks about how he likes his toast blackened and totally burnt, and I almost wonder if he's doing that just to have something quirky about himself. But there was a story a couple of years ago where he went through a really messy public divorce, and one of his contentious elements with his now ex-wife, and that was that she wouldn't let him hang up a giant portrait of himself in their living room. So there is some significant ego there, but that's not unusual for people to have the job that he has.
Yeah, thank goodness my wife let me hang my giant portrait, although it is in the bathroom, but it's up.
Yeah, as long as it's somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, Joe Buck, the guy that people love to hate, is that hate of Buck, which I've never understood, is that limited to New England?
No, it isn't. It's there's a real he hates my team element out there from a lot of different people, and it's kind of a mystery. I think maybe it's just something that hangs on him from when he was younger, when fairly or not, there was a sense of some nepotism at play, that his father was such a famous broadcaster with the Cardinals and the CBS, calling the World Series in the early 90s and those sort of things, that he was calling Cardinals games before he was out of college. So there was a sense that maybe he got some opportunities that other people wouldn't have come close to getting. He acknowledges that that's true, and so he started from a sort of a detrimental standpoint at that part. But, he came across as smug, I think, too. But As we've gotten to see him through the years, I think we realize a couple of things. He's about as self-deprecating as any broadcaster in that position could possibly be. He's in on the joke about himself, and having dealt with him quite a bit through the years, I sat in on a World Series broadcast in 2013, saw how he interacts with people he works with. It's completely genuine. Nobody busts on Joe Buck more than Joe Buck, and I like that about him. The other thing is, when he has a big game call, he nails it. He didn't quite get it right with the Cubs this year. He kind of stumbled a little bit. You remember Chris Bryant slipped at third base on the final out, and it kind of threw him off a little bit on what his call was going to be. But if you're a Boston sports fan, 2004 World Series call was absolutely perfect, better than anything we had locally by miles. And the Super Bowl, the comeback against the Falcons, which happened, you know, I can't imagine calling that because it seems so unlikely and improbable that that was going to happen. It was 28-3 late in the third quarter, and yet it unfolded so quickly. And Buck's call from that point on to the end of the game was just incredible because he was incredulous and as into it as we were. And I think he's tremendous at his job, and I wish more people would recognize that.
No, I agree with you. Well, it was a really fun piece. On the local scene in Boston, CSN, a few weeks into their new evening programming, and I know you said that you're going to wait and reserve judgment until they have a chance to get their feet under them, but what are your early reactions to it?
I'm trying to figure out what they want to be. You know, it's a three the primary one that's different is the three-hour 9-12 show every weeknight with Tom Kern, Michael Hawley, Casey Smith, and Tom Giles. And I haven't sat down and talked to their program director, but I plan to in the next couple of weeks just to get a sense for what their expectation is. Do they expect people to sit there and watch that 3 hours a night or in half-hour increments, or are they looking at it as people are coming in and out over the course of the night? Maybe they're switching over for during a break in the Red Sox game or something like that. So my first question is what the expectation is, because if they think people are going to watch that for 3 hours a night, they're nuts. In terms of what's happened so far, it's a work in progress, and that is to be expected when you're doing what they're doing, which they're moving around the set. They're shooting from locales all over the offices at Comcast. They're doing it with the same cast, essentially, for four people for 3 hours, which is just a grind. It's like doing two of those guys, or Michael Hawley, anyway, does 4 hours of sports radio a day and then goes in and does 3 hours of that, which just seems to me like he's got to be exhausted by hour three. I think they're still sorting out and figuring out what they're going to be, but I do give them credit for staffing it with guys who aren't hot takers. Michael Hawley's a really intelligent, articulate guy. Tom Curran is one of my favorite people in Boston media. He's always a voice of reason and does it in a quirky way. Casey Smith's really good. She came here from SEC Network. You didn't really know anything about her. She was a Bleacher Report right before she came here. She's really good and holds her own with those guys. And Giles is kind of your standard studio host, but he's shown a little bit more personality in this. So I give them credit for not having people come on and scream for 3 hours. They're at least trying to be reasonably intelligent about it.
Chad Finn of the Boston Globe, Boston.com with us. Well, the Celtics got that number one seed. They're off to the NBA playoffs getting underway on Sunday night. Do they have to get to the Eastern Conference Finals for this not to be a bit of a letdown after getting that top seed?
They do, because they're going to be playing the Toronto Raptors there, right? And then we're going to start thinking about maybe they could actually get to the NBA Finals after Toronto knocks off Cleveland in that pipe dream of mine. But I think winning a first round series, if you're being reasonable, is natural progress. They didn't win it last year. You know, Bradley got hurt. Crowder was playing on one leg. The Hawks pretty much overwhelmed them after Bradley went down. But this is a better team. They've taken a step forward. They've got the number one seed. They should at least win one series. I think Celtics fan would be disappointed if they didn't win two, but it's also, depending upon who they're playing, I think it could be explained as, I understand why we lost if they didn't end up losing in the second round. You know, Washington's a really athletic team who's figured it out in the second half of this season and considers themselves a Celtics rival. The Hawks give the Celtics a real hard time. You're almost rooting for Washington to win that series. And Toronto, who, they won't play in the second round, but Toronto is another team that's right there on the same level as the Celtics, really. They didn't win the East, but you look at them, and if Kyle Lowry was healthy all year, they would have been right there in the mix with the Celtics and Cavs. So, yeah, win one round, hopefully win a second, but if they put up a good fight in the second round and lose, I don't see how you can consider it anything but a positive season overall.
Speaking of basketball, and I guess back to media for a moment here, we've talked about the Bob Ryan podcast. His session with Larry Bird, that was just as good as it gets, I think, in radio.
Yeah, it is tremendous. And Bob's podcast runs on Fridays. He's kind of doing it on his own. He sits down at Hingham Restaurant and talks to a Boston sports legend every week, which is a pretty cool podcast in my mind. But with the Bird one, Bird he's just a great storyteller when he's engaged. And as he's gotten older, he likes more and more talking about those old times that all mean so much to us. He's become a little bit more nostalgic for him, which is great because he's got that dry sense of humor. He's got a incredibly sharp memory for details and what he's thinking at certain times. And to sit down and do it with Ryan, who is there through all that, and he's the institutional knowledge of professional basketball in Boston. You hear Bob Ryan and Larry Bird are going to sit down and talk to each other. You anticipate it'll be great, and then you listen to it, and it's just as good as you hoped it would be.
Are you encouraged by this 5-4 start of the Red Sox, given that they have been battling the influenza or whatever else they have that the Buck Showalter says everybody has?
Yeah, I know. He loves needling the Red Sox. I don't know why he's so bitter about them, but and then he wasn't accountable for it, which is kind of obnoxious, but. Fairly encouraged. I think the Pomerantz's first start makes you feel pretty good. You gotta say too, it sounds like things are progressing. Hopefully, with David Price, he's gonna be thrown off a mound to live batter soon. Maybe even Jackie Bradley here is gonna be coming off the deal as well. They may face each other. So, I heard he was hurt. I figured we'd be hearing more about Dr. James Andrews eventually with Price, and instead it seems like maybe that bullet has been dodged. So. You get Price back. Sale is everything you wanted him to be, even though he doesn't have a win yet. Shaughnessy and those guys are talking about how the Red Sox aren't in for any power, but there's an asterisk there because Mookie was sick, Hanley was sick. The power will come around. This looks like a pretty good baseball team to me, and probably will be what we expected them to be.
Yeah, I think so indeed. Chad Finn, Boston Globe. Always great talking with you, Chad. Have yourself a great weekend. We'll do it again soon.
Yeah, all right, Rich. Good talking to you.
Chad Finn here on Downtown for your Friday afternoon.